Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, Chapel Hill native Anna Freeman is home on leave from her work with Doctors Without Borders. And I'm going to try to get her to talk about what she does with Doctors Without Borders, how she got there, and in particular about one of her latest assignments, her main latest assignment in the Congo, what I grew up calling the Congo. Now, Anna Freeman, I call it the Democratic Republic of Congo.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, talk to us a little bit about your career and how you were able to uproot yourself from Chapel Hill to move to a career with Doctors Without Borders and a life based in the dark continent in Congo.
All right. Like you said, I grew up in Chapel Hill. I went to undergraduate school out in New Mexico and got a nursing degree. And started working as a nurse directly at UNC Hospital. So I worked there for several years, really enjoyed that. I worked in pediatrics, and that was, I learned a lot. I worked with great people. I worked with great patients, of course.
So you were learning all the time as well as working? I mean, were you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Well, I think nursing and a lot of medical careers are really neat in that way because you can learn all the time. I mean, it's an ever-changing field. So I really enjoyed that. I liked working at UNC Hospital. But after a few years of doing that, I knew I wanted to try something else.
What kinds of things did you do as a nurse at UNC Hospitals?
So I worked at the beginning on a unit that was specifically for children with heart conditions. So usually these are problems that kids are born with, congenital heart defects, where they have something has just gone wrong, and they've got a hole, or they have a tube that's going where it shouldn't go, or something like that. We're lucky now that a lot of these problems have surgical repairs that we can do that have pretty good outcomes. That's not true of every defect, but a lot of cases, kids can do very well after one or a couple of surgical repairs. So that was really interesting work. The cardiologists that I worked with were fantastic. The other nurses I worked with were great. And we worked with tons of, very charming children and wonderful families.
Well, so you were doing the cardiology aspect of it rather than mm-hmm. the surgical, or did you get into the operating room too?
Nope, I was in the post-surgical care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, all right,
yeah.
And then what happened?
Well, and then I had always been very interested in working overseas, working in tropical medicine, and specifically working with populations with either difficult access to healthcare or populations living in what we call living in distress, and that for Doctors Without Borders that can mean different things. Very often that means people who are living in what's called a conflict zone, so an area with either an ongoing conflict or with sort of intermittent conflict. Post-conflict zones, so in countries or parts of countries that have had a war or another kind of conflict and are recovering from it. People suffering from epidemic disease like cholera or malaria or HIV, among other things. And then also circumstances like natural disasters. So Haiti is a good example after the earthquake in Haiti or the typhoon in the Philippines, things like that.
Well, how did you become attracted? Or what was the connection? What was the connective link?
Well, I think one thing that I find very rewarding about nursing work, working as a bedside nurse, is working with somebody who finds themselves in a situation often out of their control, that can be very difficult to deal with, either physically or emotionally, or often both. And that certainly is true of people who I worked with in the United States. But to me, people who live in circumstances like I just described are, experiencing that even more so. Very often, people who find themselves in these circumstances are civilians, are women and children who live in very poor areas, who live in, like I said, an area with a conflict that is certainly out of their control, or even if it is in their control, it has to do with their life circumstances. And I find that very unjust that people don't have access to health care as a result, or have access to very poor health care. And there's a lot of suffering that goes along with that. So the idea of working with people who really live in these extreme situations where there is so much suffering and unnecessary death and unnecessary suffering, you know, I'd like to be part of a solution or alleviating that.
I love your description of this, but help me understand, as you're working happily and having a very satisfactory experience, UNC Hospital is taking care of people here who need that kind of good nursing care, and you start thinking, I'd like to do more, or did somebody from Doctors Without Borders come see you, or did you see an ad, or what made the link?
Well, I think I knew about their work. My parents had been donors, and I was aware of that type of work, and it had been interesting to me for those reasons that I was describing. I think anybody who does this kind of work has to be somewhat adventuresome, and I think, you know, the idea.
So you were a traveler,
when you
were working, you would go to places, not just the resorts, but go to crazy places.
Right? I do really like to travel. I mean, I certainly had been traveling in more conventional places as well.
Uh-huh.
But going places that to me are unfamiliar or unknown, there are very few things that are more interesting than that. To go explore and discover a place is...
Be dropped someplace that's not on the charts.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, you don't know what you're going to find. And that to me is so interesting. On a non-medical, non-professional level, that's a very appealing thing to do, I think. What a neat way to learn about things and different people and different cultures. And to be able to do that and also work in my career that I really love and also hopefully help to alleviate suffering or help to alleviate suffering, I mean, that's... I can do all of those things by doing this work.
I love the combination. But I'm going to press you again just because I'm curious about the time when you decided I'm going to write them a letter and ask for an application, or I saw something online, or somebody came to me and said you ought to apply. And take us through that, and then whatever the process was, how it resulted in your going to work for them.
Well,
if you joined us late, we're talking to Chapel Hill native Anna Freeman about her experience with Doctors Without Borders.
So you're right. I was working in a job that I did really enjoy at UNC Hospital. But I think, you know, I was young. I was only about 25 years old, I think, at the time. And I think I had always wanted to work overseas. I had always wanted to work for these populations in distress. You know, at that point when I was still young and I was mobile in my life, it seemed like the right time to do it. So I did. I looked online and they had an online application process that I started. And the whole thing took about 6 months, actually.
Well, why did you turn first to Doctors Without Borders rather than some other? Or is Doctors Without Borders just the lead? They've got the flag up and you knew about them and didn't know about other options.
A little bit of both. It is a very well-established organization. It's an organization that's been around for about 40 years now, which is longer than other medical humanitarian aid organizations, except for the Red Cross. So it is well-known. That was certainly part of it. Doctors Without Borders really truly works in areas where many other organizations can't or are will
so you
not
already
work.
knew all of this.
I did know a lot about that. So that made it appealing that I really felt like, and even more recognize now, that it's an organization that will go into very challenging, can certainly sometimes scary places to provide health care where it's really needed.
And that attracted you.
It did, yes.
Well, all right, so you fill out the application online, and then with your talent and your background, why didn't they send an airplane for you right away?
Well, it is a long process. You know, I went up to New York and did some interviews up there. I participated in a 3-day program that they do for all applicants where you do different training modules and different activities, and you get to really learn from experienced staff members about what it's like to work with Doctors Without Borders, which I think is a great way that they screen people and also sort of let people screen themselves, because, you know, they do show you a little bit what the living conditions are going to be like, what the work conditions are going to be like, and it's very challenging. So that was a good opportunity for people who maybe you realized this isn't actually for me to then step out, or for MS, or for Doctors Without Borders to also be able to do that and saying, maybe this isn't the right fit for you too. Well, so I did all of that. That took a few months. And then they said, we've got this position. And my first assignment that I had also was actually in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. So they said, we've got this position in a few weeks. Are you willing to take it? And I said, yes.
Well, we're visiting with Anna Freeman. She's a Chapel Hill native who works with Doctors Without Borders. She's going to tell us a little more about her experiences after the short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Anna Freeman. Anna grew up in Chapel Hill. She now works for Doctors Without Borders, which is the, I guess, famous a group of medical providers who work all over the world in challenging situations. And Anna, you told us about going on board and that your first assignment was the Democratic Republic of Congo. Tell us about getting on the plane and getting off and what you found and what you did.
Well, it was, you know, simultaneously exciting and scary, and I really didn't know what to expect. And I really tried not to imagine what I was getting myself into at that point, because I didn't want to give myself expectations that were unreasonable. So I flew over, I flew up to New York and flew over to Europe and into the Congo. And I got there on January 3rd, I remember, of 2008. And the area that I was working in at that point was called North Kivu, which is in the eastern part of the country. It borders Uganda and Rwanda.
Where the that's troubled areas.
Right, exactly. So North Kivu and South Kivu and some other areas have been the location of a very long conflict. And when I say long, I mean a couple of decades now. There have been sort of off and on fighting in that area. And I got there. My assignment was to be a hospital-based nurse manager.
Which means what?
So that means that the Doctors Without Borders was running a hospital in collaboration with the Ministry of Health in North Kivu in a town called Rutshuru, which was sort of a hotbed for conflict. So this hospital that we were running in collaboration with them had every service you can imagine for a hospital. It had an emergency room. It had adult and pediatric medicine. It had a huge surgical service for all of the war-related wounds. We had a sexual violence program, and we had also the capacity to respond to epidemics as needed. So a really big hospital. We had over 200 beds. And my job was, with another expat nurse, was to manage the nursing care within this hospital.
So a hospital not as good as UNC hospitals or as well-equipped, but not also not dirt floors and things like that. I mean, it was
It was certainly very different from UNC Hospital. Mm-hmm. We were lucky that we had physical structures that we could use, some of which were Ministry of Health structures and some of which Doctors Without Borders had built. So we had big rooms with net windows and in terms of space, we certainly had adequate space for the most part. I would say the biggest difference was that everybody shares a room. So the pediatrics ward is one big room full of children. The adult ward.
Yeah, like the army days where with lots of cots on the floor.
Right. So this was a big difference, coming, for example, from UNC Hospital, where every patient has their own room, at least in the children's hospital, which is really a nice luxury, and then going to a pediatrics ward with 30 beds, sometimes with two patients per bed, depending on how many admissions mm-hmm. we had. So that's a big difference. And even though we were fairly well-equipped for being a hospital in a pretty remote area in those circumstances, we did have an X-ray machine. We had a little bit of laboratory capacity, but that was pretty much it. Other than that, the doctors that we worked with made their diagnostics based on their clinical assessment of patients, and we, treated people with more limited supplies, obviously, than we would use here. That said, we did have a full pharmacy. We had things, adequate supplies to treat things in a satisfactory manner.
I guess what I want you to talk about, and I wish I could form the question better, but it's that you come into a professional situation which is challenging, of course, because it's a lot different from your experience at UNC Hospital, but it works. It's working. You've got colleagues that you, I guess that you like that you're working with. Living, you said you're adventuresome, but you've been dropped down in a place. Do you live on site in the hospital, or are you out in the community, or are you at risk for all of this conflict that's going on in the Congo, in the eastern part of the Congo? How all that suits you?
That's a good question. When I was there, we were living in a house separate from the hospital. And we would, every morning a car would take us to the hospital, and in the evening the car would take us back to the house where we would then have our dinner and sleep there. When I was there, the area was stable enough that we could move by car. We couldn't walk. We weren't allowed to walk out between the house and the hospital. It was about 2 miles, 2 to 3 miles between the two. It was too unsafe to walk, so we could move by car. I know that when the situation would get more tense or when there would be more fighting, the staff would move into the hospital and live there and then work while living there. And then once things calmed down, move back to the house and resume that sort of schedule of sleeping at the house and driving to the hospital in the morning.
So you couldn't go down to the market. You couldn't walk down to the marketplace or participate and get involved with the local people as if it were, you know, a tourist site. It was a war zone.
Yeah, right. We were pretty isolated.
We read in the newspaper about this part of Congo from time to time. I mean, rebellions break out. Armies are raised and move to take over the government in the main capital, or there's conflict with armies from the other countries coming in and taking part. Were you just able to isolate yourself from that part of life in the area where you were living?
That was really hard. That part of the world has a fairly complex history and a very complex recent history with different rebel groups that are maybe supported by different countries, like you said, or not, that are fighting. And certain groups will gain strength and power and then sort of fade out, and other ones will take their place. And there's, of course, a big UN mission in the area as well, and the Congolese National Army. So you've got a lot of different groups. It's pretty complex. It was interesting because I had certainly never seen anything like that living in Chapel Hill or traveling even in the areas where I had been visiting. People live amongst that. So there were still very normal qualities to the town where we live. There was a market. There were people who managed their businesses. There was a small school. People had their fields where they cultivated their crops for their families or to sell. All the while with this other activity happening. And that to me was something that I had not been able to imagine that before. And it still sometimes is hard to imagine having, living there as opposed to what I do, which is going and then being able to leave when I want to, after my assignment. At the hospital, like I said, we had a big surgical component, and I think about half of our patients that came in were for gunshot wounds, machete wounds, other trauma really related to the conflict, and that included soldiers and civilians. So we would have in our surgical, we had a male surgical ward and a female ward, and the male ward, we would have soldiers from every different rebel group.
So they've been fighting each other,
yep,
and they would all come.
And they would all be in the same surgical ward. And that was so startling to me when I first got there. Now I'm used to it, I guess. But I just remember thinking, how does this happen that, we can treat these people in the same place? And, everyone was calm and respectful and kind to the nurses, and there wasn't any tension.
You've got guys who are out there, young people, I guess, mostly male, but mm-hmm. maybe some females too, but mm-hmm. in any event, they've been fighting each other. They've been shooting at each other. So they come to the same hospital, mm-hmm. might be in the next door bed.
Right.
And do they talk to each other? Or are they,
Yeah, I think sometimes. You know, this doesn't always work like this. And certainly I've seen and heard of other places where we've had to separate people into different wards. But in this case, we were able to treat people in the same ward. There is a lot of chit chat. There, you know, the wives of soldiers come and they prepare food together for their husbands or for their sons or their brothers or whoever it is, side by side. Yeah, I can't really explain it.
I guess it's probably inexplicable, other than that, to share with us your experience of seeing. I mean, we think of our own Civil War, and sometimes the soldiers would get emergency care in the same area, but not for long. We have a hard time understanding how you could be out there fighting each other. And the question that arises in my mind is what sense you got as to what these people understood, what they were fighting for or against. I mean, what their or were they just happened to be working for the army or conscripted in somebody's army and forced to. What were the issues that they were fighting about?
Yeah, I think it was sometimes was. Could be both or a combination of those things. I think some people, had joined the Congolese army out of, because it was in some ways a job and was, more stable than other economic opportunities, although not very stable. But so there were people who did that. And then there were people who joined different rebel groups because often there's very little opportunity to do anything else. Some of the different groups were fighting for, to defend their tribe or their village. And people, I think, sometimes feel compelled to join those efforts. And I think that's mostly mm-hmm. it. I mean, there are certainly people also who bounce between different groups who are sort of career rebels, for lack of a better way to say it. But there are people who join a group for maybe idealistic reasons or for whatever reason. And then when that group sort of falls apart, they find themselves swept up into another one. And that becomes their life, too.
Wow. We're visiting, if you join us late, we're visiting with Anna Freeman. She grew up in Chapel Hill. She now works for Doctors Without Borders. She's been talking about her first assignment in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She'll tell us more after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking about Anna Freeman's, Chapel Hill native Anna Freeman's experience with Doctors Without Borders, where she works and has worked since, I guess, about 2008 when you went to the Congo, and you're telling us a little bit about that experience. I'm interested, I've got a little bit of that adventuresome thing that drives me, just not as far as it's driven you, but here you are, as far away from Chapel Hill probably as you could get in this first assignment in a hospital in the eastern Congo. But you're surrounded by people. And who are the people where did you find friends? Who were your friends? And tell us about making friendships and connections in this challenging environment.
So in that assignment and in every assignment that I've had, I've worked both with a group of expats, which is usually 5 to 15 different people from different countries. And then, of course, we have a large, what we call a national staff, so people who are hired in country who are usually from the country that we're working in. Over the years that I've been working for Doctors Without Borders, have found some very wonderful friends in both places, really. One thing that I think is so interesting is that not only do you work in a country that is a new place to visit or a new place to see that you haven't seen before, and you get to work with the people who live there and are from there and learn from them, you also get to work with expatriates from many different countries. At one point I started making a list of everybody that I had worked with in the different countries that they came from. I've since stopped doing it, but it is,
a long list.
A very long list. I've gotten to work with people from so many different places.
If when you finish your work, you want to go visiting different countries, you'll have you'll have connections mm-hmm. where you can spend the night on the sofa. Or,
right, yeah, which is a nice benefit, to definitely. So it's really neat. I mean, and one thing that's so interesting about it is that I'll be working with a group of people from different countries and from the country where we're working who all are driven by the same goal.
Which is to
work in humanitarian relief, to work with people who need medical assistance. And that's, you know, that brings us all together, even if we're from different countries, different religions, you know, we have a shared language, but maybe it's not our first language for any of us. But we still have this one thing in common, many times we have other things in common as well, that, you know, you can find these bonds with people that you never would have met otherwise, or that, you know, are come from a very different place than you. And that's really a neat thing.
Well, one of the things that I think we worry about, those of you who are willing to make that sacrifice, is that particularly in the medical field, there are risk associated with it in terms of all kinds of communicable disease, is not just the danger of working in a danger area, but that you're going to catch something. And how do you assess that risk? And did you have experience either yourself or with some of your friends who had to got sick?
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah, we do work in areas where there are endemic diseases that, you know, as Westerners, we might not be ever have been exposed to. Malaria is the number one thing that we think about and that we worry about. So in countries that are have endemic malaria, everybody takes malaria prophylaxis. We sleep under bed nets. We use bug spray to try to limit the risks. You know, there are a lot of other gastrointestinal illnesses that are usually what plague expats working in countries mm-hmm, that they are mm-hmm. not from. And then the other thing that we have to be mindful of, too, is that we are working in places that have limited access to medical care. Often the only medical care is what we are providing, and it can be very basic. So more complicated illnesses or, you know, somebody could fall down and break their leg, and we wouldn't have the capacity to treat that.
Oh, really? You couldn't mm-hmm. you couldn't set a leg?
We could probably do something, you know, something
on a simple
like
break,
that.
But mm-hmm. not on a broken hip or something like that.
Right, right. Or, you know, I've had colleagues that we've had to medically evacuate for other problems that we just did not have the capacity to treat in the field where we were.
Well, you look completely unscratched from... Have you been able to maintain your health all the way through this?
Yeah, I've been in North Carolina for a couple of months now, too. So there's always sort of a, you come home feeling pretty tired and maybe having some residual effects from illnesses in the field and then
But you do.
Recover.
I mean, you've had some of these illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to work, you know, I mean, you're just smiling about this. You just work your way through it, or is it?
Yeah, yeah. And usually, even if you feel pretty bad, usually the things that we get, you can treat, and it may take a few days or a few weeks, but we can get over them. And, you know, that's maybe a benefit, too, of being young and doing this still. I'm a pretty healthy at baseline, so.
Well, tell us, I've focused on Congo and your mm-hmm. first experience. You've had lots of other experiences. We don't have time to talk about all of them, but give us sort of a laundry list of the places that you've been and the places you've worked in, and maybe later on we can talk about one or two of them.
Sure. So I worked in Haiti in 2010 after the earthquake on an orthopedic project for people who had been injured in the earthquake. After that, I worked in South Sudan on a maternal and child health project. Then I spent quite a bit of time in Central African Republic working on a couple of different assignments within that same country, but that was during the recent coup. And then worked in Uganda in a refugee camp for South Sudanese refugees. I went back to Haiti and worked on a cholera assignment. And then my most recent assignment was back in the Congo working on a malaria project.
In the same place or in a different
place? A different place.
Uh-huh. What was that
A little
place
further
like?
South. So that was in an area called Katanga, which is in the southeastern part of the country.
Oh, back in my day, the breakaway province.
Yeah.
There were still a little bit different, or a little bit different aspirations.
Yeah, and there still are. I mean, it's really an interesting place.
Are they still fighting?
Place.
You still have some danger?
So there are, it's an area where there are certainly people who wish to secede from the Congo, and they're very active, very vocal, and can be very violent as well. The town that I worked in was relatively calm, and that was sort of their activity was a little further south of us. But we worked close to Lake Tanganyika, close to the border with Tanzania, and worked specifically on pediatric malaria response.
Well, we're visiting with Anna Freeman. She's talking about her career with Doctors Without Borders, and she and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Anna Freeman, a Chapel Hill native who works with as a nurse with Doctors Without Borders, is our guest. And she's back home after an interesting, but I'm gathering a tough assignment in the old Katanga region of the Congo. And I can't remember what you were doing there. What was your project?
So in that project, we were working on a pediatric malaria response. So that region has sort of a cyclical malaria cycle, you know, where twice a year there's a huge outbreak of malaria during and a little bit after the rainy season.
And what was your assignment when they said, "Hey, we need you to go mm-hmm. to Katanga for this malaria response"? Mm-hmm. And here's what we want you to do. How'd they describe it to you?
In that case, I was what's called the project coordinator. So I went with a team of 8 other expats and was the coordinator for all of them, and they
each managed.
Is
this a new project, or is
mm-hmm.
it?
Right, it was a new project. So we opened a project, and this was another project where we worked in collaboration with the Ministry of Health to provide testing and treatment for malaria in a hospital and also in several health centers. You know, this is an area where people live often very far away from the hospital. I mean, 100 miles away from the only hospital in the area. So we worked to provide access to malaria testing, malaria treatment, and then also referrals to the hospital for very sick children to be managed as inpatients.
You and your team mm-hmm. of other non-Congolese mm-hmm. people get on an airplane together, you land in the city, and we're... I mean, what's next? I mean,
So there were, you know, we all arrived within a few days of each other. Like I said, it was me and a few other expats, and then also experienced Congolese staff as well. And because we were opening the project, you know, we didn't have anywhere to live. We didn't have anywhere to work in an office setting, you know, for the more administrative tasks.
Did you just carry a sack full of money?
Well, yeah. So that's can be complicated. We, we had money with us. We had our personal belongings with us. You know, everyone had a backpack with them, and we show up, and luckily we had some people who drove over, so we had some cars, and we found a guest house that was.
It wasn't lined up for you in advance. You had to go look.
You find it. Yeah, we find it, and then we set it up and you know, work out a contract and then have a place to stay. But it was, you know, we this is a town that was quite poor and quite undeveloped, but did have this hospital, and it did have a couple of places where you could rent a room. So we were able to find a place to for all of us to stay and for all of us to work. And then we set about with the Ministry of Health, with the head doctor in the area, negotiating what we could offer,
They expecting you?
They were expecting us, yes. So we had, the reason that we went to this one particular place was that we had gotten information about sort of alarming mortality rates due to malaria. And so we went and we did our own investigation looking at sort of their statistics, looking at the figures we were getting and also getting reports from different people. And we're able to sort of judge for ourselves as well that, yes, there was a huge problem with mortality related to malaria. So then the next step is to say, well, what can we do? What, you know, how can we contribute to reducing the mortality and morbidity and while working with the Ministry of Health? You know, in that case, we didn't want to replace the Ministry of Health, but we also wanted to be able to work with them to quickly and effectively treat children who were dying from malaria. And that can be really tricky.
Yeah,
that can
but
be a
how
tough
do you do?
Balance.
I mean, you're strangers in land. You had a overlapping bureaucracy that wants to help you but feels threatened a little bit. Tense relationships, and you got to go out and come up with a solution to a problem that they haven't solved yet. Mm-hmm. How did you solve this problem?
I mean, well, it was pretty challenging. I mean, you know, in some ways, even though we hadn't been in that town, Doctors Without Borders has worked in the Congo since 1981, and so it's a very known organization in the country. So that helps. You know, we have relationships already established with different people within the Ministry of Health and people in the community as well. So that certainly helped. You know, it's also, I think, this type of project is something that we do fairly often. And so I think from our perspective, we sort of knew, okay, you know, here's what we can do.
You've got a standard plan for how you do these kinds of things.
Kind of, yeah, that you can sort of adapt to the context. So, you know, we could talk to the head doctor who was in charge of the hospital and all the health centers in this area and say, you know, these are your statistics. This is what you're seeing. We agree this is a huge problem. Let's work together to figure out what we can do. Here's what we can offer. Do you accept this? If not, we know, what do you think that we should be doing? And then we sort of take what their proposal is and what our proposal is and see where we can compromise. Or, you know, for example, we said we'd like to work in the hospital in pediatrics and in the lab, and we'd also like to work in 6 health centers. And they wanted us to work in more health centers than that, so we were able to add another health center.
These are throughout the province, or
exactly, yeah.
And so, well, real quickly, what did you do, and did you conquer malaria in that region of the Congo, or to what extent
right,
were you able
so,
to improve it?
You know, we were there for about 4 months in the end during the high season of malaria. In an outpatient setting, we treated over 10,000 children for malaria. We hospitalized an additional 2,000 children who needed inpatient care. So that's a lot of kids that got treatment for free that otherwise maybe would not have had any access to.
And so malaria is the quick treatment improves the chances for recovery and for avoiding the avoiding death from malaria. Is
right.
that right?
Mm-hmm.
So for the temporary, or for the for working in the moment, you were able to save the lives of a number of people. And then, what did you leave behind, or what's left behind to mm-hmm. Assure a continuation of that?
Yeah, that's tricky. So, you know, we did leave behind. We did a lot of training with the staff in the hospital and the health centers. We helped implement the new national protocols for treatment of malaria, which hadn't been implemented in that part of the country. So we were able to sort of update their regimen that they were using for treatment as well. We did some logistical improvements, you know, things like emptying latrines, like building new structures, that will continue and be mm-hmm. able to serve them for a long time. We left behind donations when we left so that they could continue providing the care for a short time. You know, we can't supply them forever. And also, I think, you know, we worked to build a relationship with the community and with the Ministry of Health in that area to where we can go back if we need to. If, you know, at the next high season, mm-hmm. we think that we need to go back and give the same support, we can. If there's something else that happens in that area, we've got these contacts now that we can help. But again, without replacing the Ministry of Health, without taking over, which, you know, I think
well, that's good things. Fascinating. I could talk to you all day long about these different assignments that you've had. You're at home resting and recuperating, but you're not through, right?
Oh, no. Nope.
Do you have any idea where you might be going? I mean, what would be some of the opportunities that they might present to you?
I think, you know, I do plan to leave probably in the next couple of weeks again. I don't have an assignment yet, which is, this is typical. It's usually fairly last minute. You know, right now there are a lot of needs in Central Africa and around Central Africa. There are a lot of needs in South Sudan and in the surrounding countries and in the Syria region. Of course, now we also have the conflict in Gaza and the response to Ebola, and there are a lot of things going on.
Anna Freeman, thank you for sharing some of those experiences with us and for representing us in the service that many of us wish that we could be called to.
Thank you. Really great to be here. Thank you.
Anna Freeman's been our guest. She's a Chapel Hill native working with Doctors Without Borders. Thanks to her. And thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.